This might be the template that all intros get based around.
Oh my God, you are selling yourself high here. Wow, you look nervous.
I am. I'm psyching myself up here.
Why?
Just get
You're sitting in a room
three,
by yourself. Just
3, 2, 1.
What up, guys? Welcome to the roundtable.
You can't say what up, guys. Oh, you can say what up, guy.
What am I supposed to say?
Just be like, hey, everybody. What up, guys? You're so cool. I was fired up, man. Your energy was through the roof, but you said what up, guys.
What up, guys, is...
No. I was fine.
You know what
I was
from?
Wait, sorry. Try it again, but I had to laugh at what up, guys. The energy was top notch, so I like that. I won't hold you down.
Guys is
no. I was fine.
You know what
I
was from?
Wait, fine. Sorry, try it again, but I had to laugh at what up, guy. The energy was top notch, so I like that.
You know what that's from? That's from Family Guy when they do that skit about they make fun of like the YouTuber. What up, guys? It's Corey from Corey's World.
Oh, I've never
seen it. I thought that was fine. Jamie's just throwing you under the bus.
Sorry. Okay, ready.
Jamie, you know I'm a one take wonder, and you just threw.
No, you got. You're good. You're good. 3, 2, 1, go.
All right, I gotta
come on.
I immediately went to what up, guys, in my head.
I know you did.
Okay.
3, 2, 1, get into it.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the roundtable. It's Mike Albanese here, your host. Joining me today, Jamie Phillips, Derek Bujan. We're gonna talk all things goaltending. What's up, guys? What do we got today?
Well, it's the same group.
Yeah, dude, the what same up guys again, eh?
It's the same. You said joining us today, but we're always here. The same. Yeah. The same host.
Did I say as always?
No, you said like.
It was good.
It was good. I liked it. We're just giving you a hard time. No, we're
listening to your
phone.
Do we want to go? We want to go back and criticize how many times you're going to say "hit the nail on the head" or "tell me a wild story." Or any of the other three phrases you got.
Well, at the end of the day, we really need to hit the nail on the head with stories, all right, Boosh?
When all is said and done, we need to hit the nail on the head at the end of the day.
That's right. Oh, I almost said it again right there.
That was a good intro. I was funny because I joined here today. It's like, it's the usual crew.
Yeah.
We're all terrible, and we're just trying our best.
Yeah. We're in the feeling out stage. But
your boys, the Colorado Avalanche, big goalie signing. What do you think?
Oh, you mean the Justus Annunen?
Yeah,
I think it's pronounced Justice.
Justice, yeah, with an I.
Justice, yeah. Antoinette, I think.
I like it. He had a really good year in Liga. I was, to be perfectly honest, disappointed with his performance at the World Juniors. But I mean, he's got all the tools. He's a big boy. He's got really good technique. Derek will tell you that he lacks battle because he read that on a scouting report. But I mean, I think that's something
I read that on multiple scouting reports, multiple, not one, multiple scouting reports.
Right. Okay.
And the word is lacks battle and compete and is out of shape. So because the Colorado Avalanche have signed him, it doesn't mean he is the second coming of Varley. Like he's just a guy, and if you can't battle or if you can't compete, this guy is not, in my opinion, is not a guy you're going to see in the NHL as a number one goalie. That's just because you can't teach compete, you can't teach battle, and you can't teach compete.
Well, I think there's aspects of it that you can teach. I don't think it's fair to say you can't teach battle, can't teach compete. I mean, before we even get into that, let's talk about what we even mean by battle or compete. Because for me, I look at it on three different time scales, right? You got situational battle, or, you know, that in the moment battle where there's traffic in front of you, the puck's flying around, you got to battle through that and make a save. There's the second tier time-wise would be battle game by game. You're 5 minutes in, you've already given up two. Now the game gets a lot harder. You got to battle through that game. And then there's the overall career time horizon. You don't make the team you want to make. You don't get the starts that you want to get. Can you battle through that? And stay committed to the goal moving forward and just keep using that as fuel? You know, what kind of battle are we talking about here?
I like that three-tier time. That was pretty good. But for me, battle is basically how bad do you want to stop the puck? I mean, the tiers are all good, but if you have that, you know, that drive, that internal desire that you're willing to literally die for that puck, then it doesn't matter if there's a traffic or if it's in tight screen or you let in six in the first 10 minutes or it's game 900 of your career. If that fire is still there, that fire has been burning since day one, and it's going to burn until the day you can no longer play. So for me, I like the way you broke that down. I thought that was excellent. But someone that really has that drive and that battle, like, it doesn't matter. It does practice game. They're going all in. They're, you know, taking the Doug Glatt slap shot to the face kind of just to keep the puck out of the net.
Yeah, but that's a character trait. Battle is a character trait. It's a compete level is a character trait. It has nothing to do with stopping the puck, because if you have battle and you have character, then it's your day-to-day actions that I would define as battle and character. And that is going to allow you to put in the work to stop the puck. So if I see, or if I read in a scouting report that he lacks battle and compete level, to me, it has nothing to do with his ability to scramble, right? That's an on-ice situational singular kind of moment in time. To me, battle means, okay, you've sat 10 games in a row, you get in, what do you do, right? That's battle to me. That's the character. What his work ethic is when things aren't going his way. Is he still sticking to his pregame routine and his off-ice strength and conditioning when things aren't going his way? Is he able to bounce back? Does he have resiliency? Is he a leader? That's when I read he doesn't have battle or compete. That's what it encompasses to me, which we can break it down into 17 tiers if you want, or one singular scramble. But you guys, just you're missing the point on what holistically and overall what compete and battle is.
But I think if a player is conscious, and that you have to be conscious of the fact that, okay, this is something that I lack, and this is something that I need to get better at working on. I need to become more resilient. I need to get more grit. I need to get more, you know, more fortitude. I think if you have people around you that can help you kind of see the path by leading by example, right? You can work on the character trait of battle, just like you can work on other character traits throughout your life, because the person that you are when you're 20 years old is not, you know, definitely going to be the person that you are at 25 or 30. In fact, if you're the same person at 25 and 30, then you've gone backwards because you haven't grown as a person. So I think if you surround yourself with the right people, and if you are consciously aware of this is something I need to get better at, then you can become more of a battler. You can become more of a competitor. But, you know, I do agree that it is an instinct and it is something that's in you, right? Different people have different levels of it. But if you're conscious of the fact that you want to get better at it, then you can do that.
Okay, that's a great point. But if that's a great point, if we're talking about the general population, and we're talking about guys that play average hockey, when we're talking about world-class 1% of the 1%, and this guy is trying to break into that 1%, he's competing against guys that are in that 1%. If he doesn't have that character trait built into him, it's not ingrained in his genetics, and he has to now try and learn that, there's no way he's going to be able to break in. Just not going to happen, because it's too high of a level. The competition is too good. His time frame is too small. How many guys are on the cusp of making the NHL every year?
Yeah, a lot.
Well, at least minimum, right? 60, at least two guys
60 a year.
Minimum.
If this guy is trying to learn how to battle and build that kind of resiliency and leadership when he's 20 years old, competing against all these other guys that already have it, because you look at any guy in the NHL, they're in the NHL, they have that. That's built into them, right? We can't use the guys in the NHL and kind of compare them in terms of battle level, because they're all in the NHL because that's already in them. In my opinion, you can't teach that, and you can't make somebody want to do that.
Mm-hmm. No, I completely hear that. And I get what you're saying by when you're 20 and you're on the cusp, now is not the time to learn. It's, you know, it's too late now. So let me ask you this. Say you have a guy that's, you know, 11 to 13 years old and he's got all the tools. You like him as a goalie, but you think that he needs to get more competitive. He needs to get more of an edge. You're his goalie coach. What are you doing with him on the ice to kind of, or off the ice to kind of try to help him find that within himself? Because it's not like you're saying, here, if we do this drill, you will become a more competitive person overall. That fire will, you know, be lit inside you. It's only something that they can light for themselves. So what can you do to help them kind of find that if you see it's something that they're lacking?
I think the only thing that as a goalie coach is that we can convey that we don't think that they are working hard enough or they're doing the things they need to do. But we can't babysit them and we can't teach them to make those choices. They have to make those choices themselves. And that's a hard conversation to have with a kid who's 13. I think at 13 is a little bit early. I think you kind of see it at like 15, 16 when they're starting to get into junior. And because the guys that move into junior are elite. Like if you're playing junior hockey at any level, you're an elite goalie. And then that's when things start kind of maybe not going the way, and they're not going linear for you anymore. Now it's kind of all over. And then we see the makeup of the kid then. But I that's a hard question to answer. And because as a goalie coach, I don't believe I can teach a kid to compete in battle. I can push a kid and he might compete in battle for me in a session, like a private session or a semi-private session. He may give me everything he wants in that moment. But then when he goes home, is he competing to get better or is he not competing to get better? And I don't have those answers because I don't know what he's doing at home.
From a goalie standpoint, I played with a couple of guys that were just didn't truly want it. And it sucks to play with guys like that because I really wanted it. And I wanted my partner to really want it so that we could battle and we could work off each other and we could get better. Cause I wanted to be better than him, but I didn't want to be better than him because he just hated practice.
Wasn't working hard.
Yeah. It just sucked. It wasn't fun. Cause I like that competitive. I want that drive. Like I want to make an absolutely sick save. And I want him at the other end to be like, oh God, I have to make a sick save. Then he'll make a sick save. And I'll be like, I have to make a sick save. And that's that back and forth is what makes it fun and exciting. And it's what gets you better. So as a perspective of guys, like playing at a high level, there are expectations you need to meet. And if you're not a competitive guy and you don't have that competitive gene and your partner really has it, it's going to be frustrating your partner and frustrating the players. They know when guys, you know, if you're not trying on every shot, nothing makes players more angry than that. They hate it. And they're going to get so mad at you and they'll yell at you and they'll shoot pucks at your ankles and they'll shoot pucks at the back of your head and they'll chirp you and they'll rip you until you do it. And whether you do it or not, I don't know, but it's just the way it is.
Yeah. And that's what you brought up. What I kind of thought was if you see a guy getting beat, so let's just say let's go back to say a scouting report. So in a scouting report, when in terms of scouting reports can lie and reading one scouting report is just not enough information for you. Because if I read a scouting report and say two scouts watch the same game and a kid gives up a goal and he turns around and he smashes his stick against the crossbar, one of those scouts will write, kid cannot control his emotions. The other scout will write, love his battle is compete level, right? So same exact action by a goalie after a goal now draws two different opinions from a scout. So that's why it's important as goalie coaches for us that we know what that means. Is the kid smashing a stick because he's frustrated with himself, or is he smashing a stick because he's frustrated with his teammates, or is he smashing a stick because he's just competing? He doesn't like getting scored on. So it's important that we know what all of their kind of mannerisms and emotional outbursts mean to them so that we as goalie coaches can help manage that or kind of use that for them to use it to change their mindset too.
I think right there is a perfect time to segue into our guest because he does mention about what he is looking for as an OHL goalie coach when evaluating. And when he breaks it down I mean, he sums up basically everything we just said and everything you just said in that sentence. So our guest on this episode is Frankie Palazzi, the goalie coach of the Sarnia Sting. Someone I played against growing up as a kid. We worked out together. Super nice guy, super intelligent, done very well for himself in the goalie world. And it's a very, very, very good interview. And a lot of young goalies will get a lot of good value from it.
Well, I don't know if you ever met Jamie, but Jamie...
We used to work out together.
Top right of my screen.
We worked out together.
Yeah, check the scouting notes, Boosh. Back at the old varsity hockey days.
That's right.
Google didn't say that you two worked out together. tough search engine.
Well, if you go and back to my Instagram from 6 years ago, there's a post of us shirtless flexing at the end of the summer. So you tell me. Do your research. Shit,
there you go.
Oh, I guess that picture's going in the pod then.
Yeah, well, the problem is there's like 10 other people in there, so.
6 years ago, you would have been about 170 pounds and just bean pulled.
So about the same as I am now, except 6 years ago.
Yeah. less mustache.
A lot less mustache.
So, Frankie, you're coach with Sarnia Sting. So this was your first full season with them. Can you just kind of go a little bit in – I know when I first got into coaching from playing and then got on the changed kind of sides and got in that coaching room, there's a lot of eye-opening things that I saw that as a player you don't see behind the scenes. What is the biggest learning experience from going from kind of playing and being goalie development as an instructor or coach to now being part of a team culture and developing goalies in the OHL system?
Yeah, you know what? I mean, that's a great question. It's very, very different, obviously, being on the coaching side of this league than being on the player side. On the player side, I mean, obviously, you're just worried about your play and recovery and all that kind of stuff. And now on the coaching side, it's like you're almost in charge of the way we operate in Sarnia. All the coaches kind of stay in their own lane. So we got our D guy who worries about the D, obviously the forwards, head coach. And then so the goalie department, they kind of just, they leave it to me. I operate the goalie department. No one really meddles too much in my operations there. So it is interesting just being on that side and working with Ben and Ethan Langevin, who are our two guys there. Each guy obviously has their own strengths and their own deficiencies. So just tailoring your day-to-day operations, whether it's video, on ice, calls like this to develop them and just trying to give them a roadmap to try to have success. So it was a little different because obviously being in that league rather than just going on the ice for a session one-on-one is different because now you've got a lot of pressure on you too.
And speaking of pressure, so Ben Goodrow was picked 7th overall in the 2019 draft. But what's it like working with somebody like Ben who was taken so high in the draft and there is a little bit of pressure on you as a goalie coach to make sure he develops and kind of lives up to that billing?
Yeah, you're 100% right. I mean, as soon as I got the job, obviously when I was interviewing for it, I knew who was coming in there, and I think he's the highest draft pick in about 20 or 25 years of the league. So I do feel a sense of pressure with a guy like Ben. To be honest, he's very, very mature beyond his years. He takes care of himself off the ice, which at that age you don't see a lot because at 16 years old, after coming out of minor midget, not a lot of guys know. We really got to put in all the work off the ice as well. So he does make it easy for me, but there's no doubt it's like everything I do, I try to be very, very meticulous and detailed, and you just want to make sure you're developing him on the curve that he should be developing, because obviously he was a great goalie before I got my hands on him in Sarnia. So I'm just kind of trying to develop him along and ultimately hopefully make him a first round draft pick next year to the NHL.
What do you think is the biggest challenge a young guy, like a 16-year-old, coming out of minor midget and entering the OHL is? I mean, you played in the O, you've been there, you're a coach, you have guys doing it. Like, what do you think the transition is and the biggest issues guys need to work on? Yeah, it's a really tough transition. You really don't see many guys just jump into the league and have success, obviously. So number one, I think just the pace of play is that much higher than what they were used to in, let's say, minor midget or even junior A or whatever it was. Now you're dealing with first round NHL guys or NHL draft picks, and you're playing against men too, which is another factor. You're 16, 17 playing against 19, 20 year olds. So that's definitely a big adjustment. I find just shot releases and speeds and deception on how they release the puck is another adjustment that takes guys, like, let's say even Ben, it took him a couple, maybe a month, 2 months of practice to get used to that. And then the workload too. So now you're working out every day, you're on the bus, you're traveling, you got to deal with school, you're in a 68 game schedule. I know you play a lot of games in minor midget, but I mean, I don't think it's the same level of pressure, obviously, either. So there are a lot of factors, and I think those reasons is why, like, it's tough to step into that league and just have immediate success. And that's why most teams you see try to groom their young guys, give them 10 to 20 games, depending on how they do in their first year.
What's your philosophy around developing a guy and letting him, I guess, when he's ready to play? Like, you had mentioned that Ben needed some practice. At what point were you like, he's ready? And at what point, and what factors, you know, go into that decision?
Yeah, so with Ben, it was a little bit of a different scenario where he had a pretty serious injury. So he was recovering. So he got to get all these practices under his belt while we had two other capable guys there. So it did actually give him a lot more time to get adjusted and acclimated to the speed. So for him, it worked out well. I mean, he ended up playing his first game against Barry, and Barry went 50 of 51, which I don't think I've ever seen a rookie come into their first game in the league and do that. And the performance was just unbelievable. It looked like a guy who's been in the league for 4 or 5 years. So that was impressive. But you know what? Again, with him, I don't think he needed the same adjustment that, let's say, other guys would need. I think he is really a special, just God-given raw talent where it's like, I don't think you'll see that commonly with other rookies. So, I mean, to that question for me, like, if it wasn't Ben, it's just you give him time and you maybe spot him a game here and there. But you, as coaches and on the coaching staff, you have to be fully prepared for a game where you're not going to get 50 of 51 from a rookie, obviously. You got to give them a growing period, and you can't say, oh, well, he let in 6 goals. Now we got to get rid of him. Like, there's got to be an adjustment period if you're going to commit to a rookie coming into your team.
And I saw a stat that he was 4-0-1 in games where he had 40 plus.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he was 4-0-1, and he had, I believe it was like a 939 or a 940 in games that he had over 40 shots. So again, it's like you don't see that often, especially at 16. He was the only 16-year-old that played consistently, 03 born in the league this year. So I mean, to me it's kind of looking like the league is starting to give goalies a little more time where they're not throwing them in at 16 like they used to fairly commonly. I don't know why that is, but that seems to be kind of the way the league is starting to go now.
So let's not sell Langevin short either. I saw Langevin play minor midget. He's an 0-1. So yeah, he played Whippy. So I saw a lot of the 0-1 draft class, and I've seen how he's progressed his kind of game and how he's developed over the past 2 years. And he had a pretty good run this year also.
He did. He went through a stretch where he was playing very, very, very good hockey. Our guys, we didn't always get the results on the stat sheet that probably sometimes indicated how they played. The OHL nowadays has changed from, let's say, 5, 6, 7 years ago, in my opinion. We're now, obviously, I'm sure you've seen stats and scores, and there's you get your 11-10 games and your 10-8 games. And
It seems like commonly now, if you have an 890, you've had a fairly good season, as opposed to before it was like a 910, 915. So it is a little bit more wide open. But Langevin, I mean, he was very good in a lot of his games this year. And he's a smaller stature guy. He's 5'10". And the ability he has and uses his size is pretty incredible. And then to another point, he was also, again, very important. And I feel like you need this too for a guy like Ben. Like, he was the older guy. They formed a pretty good friendship in sessions. They would work off each other off ice. They would help each other out. And Langevin kind of mentored him, which was, and Ben's told me, very important for his growth this year.
I've got a question for you as the goalie coach. The OHL is a grind of a season. You've got two guys that are, you know, they might be similar. They might be different. As the goalie coach, how do you keep things fresh for them throughout, you know, the long season, to keep them engaged and to make sure that it's not monotonous?
Yeah, so you know what? So I try to reset their week every week. You try to build routine. So, I mean, for our guys personally, Tuesdays were our goalie session days. So we get it. Mondays were generally a day off after, let's say, 2-3 games on the weekend. Sometimes it was Sundays, depending on when, but usually Mondays. So Tuesday we would get in there. We would do our video sessions individually, each goalie. Sometimes we would do private, sometimes we would do an hour and a half, an hour and 40 minutes of a semi-private. Then we would have our practice, and then just building routines off the ice too, workouts and stuff. And you want to stick to a schedule, because like you said, it could seem like this is really drawing on here and it's continuous. But to that point, both our guys played pretty much 50-50 this year too. So it kind of kept them both fresh and kept them both eager. And our coaches were really good with rewarding good play. So if you had a good game, they would go back with you. And both guys got fair chance, and both guys did well with what they got.
Did the coaching staff lean on you for starting decisions, or did you have any influence there?
Yeah. It all depended on the scenario and the time and season and a lot of different factors. But yeah, they definitely relied on my influence a lot of times for some decisions.
Kind of get into kind of the draft. I know the draft is kind of a big, long process, and a lot of my questions have to do with kind of how the draft works, because a lot of the guys that listen to this are younger goalies. Maybe some of them are going into their draft year, or their 06s or 07s. But as a goalie coach in the OHL, and in terms of that draft year, so from minor midget AAA in Ontario and kind of surrounding areas that are the location for the Ontario League, what is your role in terms of the draft and leading up to the draft? Are you out actively watching tournaments, or are you getting names from your scouting staff and you watch video? Kind of explain how it works in the OHL in terms of how the starting is staying in the draft and how you were treated in that process.
Yeah, so like I touched on earlier, like, I'm fortunate in Sarnia where they have put a significant amount of trust in myself in that goalie department. So part of my day-to-day duties is exactly what you said. So I go out and I watch games all year, from September, the first tournament, right through to what would have been the OHL Cup, which obviously didn't get going. But so all year I was out watching games, whether it was GTHL, OMHA, I mean, it kind of didn't matter, whenever I had time. Watching games, even on video, GTHL has Game On, what it's called, and you could sit right behind goalies and watch live games. So that was a useful tool for me. And then, so identifying guys myself, and then obviously scouts giving me their lists as well, looking at those. I try not to go too much off of the list too early, because you don't want a biased opinion on guys. You want to give everybody a fair shot and a fair look, because what might catch one guy's eye might not catch my eye, or reversed. So kind of trying to watch everybody that you can. And then as we move forward, we start to talk, we compile our list, and that changes a lot of times throughout the year. And then leading up to the draft about a week before, and obviously with the quarantine this year, I had nothing but time. So we compiled a preliminary final list, watched video on all of those guys in depth, tried to do background work, like we touched base before the draft as well, talking to goalie coaches, head coaches, trying to gather as much info as possible on the kid, interview a number of kids. For me, character off ice is very, very, very important in drafting a kid, because there's a lot of good goalies, a lot of guys real close in parity. So what separates a guy that you take at, I don't know, 83rd overall, right? So it gets very close. And for me, it comes down to character at the end if guys are close. So then we went through that process, interviewing, and then ultimately sat down with the scouts and compiled the final draft list. And that's kind of the process with that.
So you during the course.
No, what do you got? Is your question better than mine?
That's not bad. But you and I both went through the OHL draft. We experienced it. And I remember when we were young, it was always, oh, are you on the draft list? What's the draft list saying? You know, what's that Network 54? What's that saying? But we never really got, as when we played, we never really got to hear or get, you know, see what's actually going on behind the curtains. How much do goalie coaches and scouts and GMs pay attention to those lists, the official lists that are released to the rank list?
Yeah. So I don't know how teams do it. And quite frankly, I don't even know how Sarnia does it, because I am in no capacity dealing with anything to do with players. I'm strictly on goalies. So I know how I do it with the goalies and how we do it with the goalies. And personally, I don't put a lot of stock in that list, those lists at all. Personally, like zero. Just because, like I said, you don't want to form a biased opinion based off somebody else. Every goalie coach or even scouts have their own opinions on guys and what they're looking for. So for me, it might be one thing, and another guy, obviously, something else. So I guess to shortly answer that, no, I did not put any stock into those lists that were pumped out, and made my own list.
That's, I mean, for the listeners, that's a really important thing to note, because I know that a lot of guys, players, put stock into that. And, you know, when they release the first round of the list and guys aren't on it, they immediately get discouraged. You know, they think that their season's done, they're not going to get drafted. And as the years go on, obviously the names come on and off that list. But for viewers out there, it's, you know, you're hearing from a guy that scouts goalies for the OHL, you know, doesn't really matter what the list say. If you're going to play well, you have good character, and you're a good goalie, you're going to open eyes.
Yeah, and to your point, I was talking to some of my goalies leading up to the draft. I mean, all it takes is one team, right? You don't need to be on any list of 19 teams, and if you are highly rated by one team, you could be drafted. And who knows what round it could be, but you could be drafted. So, I would say to kids who do watch this to not put thought or stock into preliminary lists, even though I know it's hard to say and you see it and you get discouraged. But reality is, I don't think a lot of teams or let's say goalies, because we're on that position, really goalie coaches, knowing other guys in the league, I feel like they would really go off their own opinions as well, rather than other things. And a follow up to that, because I had some guys, and I've had guys in the past 2-3 years who have been drafted, who have been talking to me in like November, December, and they've been saying, well, I haven't heard from any OHL teams. Does that mean I'm not getting drafted? And the answer to that is simply no. It doesn't really mean anything. Because like I mentioned, a lot of goalies that I got in contact with, or our scouts got in contact with, we had no contact with until four or five days before the draft. So just because you didn't hear from somebody in December doesn't mean you're not on their list or highly ranked by them, because you just don't have time to be talking to all of these kids throughout the year in a busy OHL season.
And also, I think it's important that for guys that aren't hearing from teams early on, I feel like the way you finish the last half of the season as a goaltender is much more heavily weighed than how you start, because you need to show consistency from September until March. And what you do at the beginning of the season, to me, is teams aren't really set in their structure yet. Players are still developing. They're getting better. And the minor midget hockey you see kind of in December and end of November is a step better. And it's a little bit more refined, and the hockey is more competitive at that level. That if you're playing more of a consistent game in November, December, January, to me, and as a guy who watches goalies and kind of ranks goalies, I'm going to outweigh how you play in January than how you play in September. So it's important for those guys to understand that. Yeah, you know what? Yeah, I'm not talking to anybody in November, but stay consistent in your preparation. Stay consistent in your mindset. And at the end, in March, that's when all that work and all that consistency is going to pay off for you. And that's when those teams are going to start reaching out.
Yeah, I do agree. And to that point, I mean, I'm sure you have guys too that develop a lot throughout the season, and they are a much different goalie in, let's say, January than September. So to that point, when I was watching video leading up to the draft, I tried to target games later in the season. So the games in February and games in January were the games that I really tried to watch and put as much stock as I can in those games, as opposed to September where everybody's just off to the races early. So yeah, that's a great
point. It's one of those things, like, you know, as an athlete, you always kind of want to know what are the coaches thinking, what are the scouts thinking. So even I was genuinely curious, I mean, going through that process as when I was 16, like, I really wanted to know, like, how much do people actually pay attention to the list? So it's good to know that, you know, all that stress and anxiety and all the rumors and murmurs that you had when we were 15, 16 years old, it really wasn't as serious as we thought it was.
Yeah, and I think this position, and I've learned just knowing scouts, even on other teams and talking to different guys, I mean, a lot of guys, admittedly so, will flat out say, like, we don't really know what we're looking at in a goalie. Like, how are we going to project a 15-year-old guy to be a 150-game OHL veteran? I mean, they don't know what guys like us could see and can identify and could project. And listen, it's tough for anybody to project. There's no real expert, but goalie coaches, I guess, have a formula, what they're looking for. And like I said, like, a lot of scouts will either pass their preliminary stuff over to their goalie coaches of their teams, or even some OHL teams have designated goalie scouts where guys just go out and just watch goalies, which I think is very important, because it is tough for a guy who hasn't been in the shoes of a goalie to come up with a calculation on, like, what are we looking at here? I mean, a lot of scouts don't know when to use a reverse VH and when it's overused and when not to use it. And it's like the puck's on the half wall and the guy's still down in a reverse VH. It's like, you got to be able to pick up on stuff like that.
Without giving up your formula, obviously, because it's yours, what are the few big things that you notice right off the bat from when you go scout that are positives? Like, what are you looking for in your first initial glimpse of a goalie?
Yeah, so again, for kids watching, I mean, like what I like to see, number one, I like a guy who's a good skater. You've got to be able to move. And this kind of transitions into, you've got to be able to read the play. So what I mean by reading the play is, the puck's in the corner, and there's an F3, a guy in the slot, or a defenseman pinching in back door. Did the goalie just stare at the guy in the corner and get burned back door now? Or did he take a scan off the puck and see that guy pinch in, and now he makes a save where it's like, that's a grade A quality save? So skating and reading the play are very, very important, just because in the OHL, it is a cross ice league. A lot of things going east west, and sometimes more than one time, sometimes two, sometimes three times. So you've got to know what hand the guy shoots. You got to know where guys are. You got to know when to give up depth in bad areas and when not to over challenge and stuff like that. So those two things are important. And then obviously there's lots of other things that you're looking for that could kind of coincide with stuff like that. But those two things for me are like, if you don't got those two, I can't really build up on it after that. And yes, you could develop a guy to have that. But again, for the OHL draft, which is it's an honor to be drafted. Not a lot of guys can get drafted. You want a guy who's somewhat ready. And those two things for me are kind of it.
Hockey IQ is big, and it's hard to teach hockey IQ. So the fact that you're talking about guys that can read and react and read the play, I call it seeing the game in slow motion. That's kind of my cliche. And but it's when you can work on skating, you can work on skill fairly easy. It's very hard to develop hockey IQ. And the fact that you kind of prioritize that in your scouting is, to me, I think that's like you're hitting the nail right in the head, because that's a big thing in my opinion too, that makes takes a goalie who's good and makes them great or elite. And that's a big deciding factor. Sarnia, do you guys have three goalies on contracts right now?
Nope. We only got two.
You have two. So for those guys that are kind of protected property, the Sarnia thing, that are playing elsewhere during the year, what do you do and what role do you take in terms of their development when you're not with them on a week-to-week basis?
Yeah, so for instance, this year, we actually, again, unique scenario, we did not have a lot of depth at the goalie position in the system. So this year, there was one kid in particular that I did. He actually was in Toronto, so I worked with him throughout the year. And I mean, I would see him once a week and train him and be in contact with him. And other than that, you know what, there's not too much depth to that question, because I haven't really experienced much of that yet, just because we didn't have depth. Now, we added two more guys this year, one in the eighth round and one in the minor midget draft, and then one in the midget draft at number three overall. So we're going to have more guys into the fold this year. And we've already got a plan what we're going to do and try to see those guys weekly and for sessions, and if you can't get in sessions, just staying on their development process with whoever their goalie coach is at the time, but no doubt staying tapped into what they're doing, because I mean, you can't develop a guy to come step into your team if you're not on top of what they're doing.
Now, we actually had this debate right before we hopped on the interview, because we were talking about a goalie that just signed an NHL contract, and in one of the scouting reports you read, it said that he didn't battle hard enough, or he didn't have compete levels. Do you think, as a professional goalie coach, that you can teach battle, or is that something that's a natural instinct?
Yeah, for me, it's got to be natural. Compete, battle, intensity. I mean, you can't get on the ice with a kid and start yelling and trying to motivate him. I mean, you're there to coach and to refine and to develop and to try to mentor, but you're not there to try to make a kid work hard. And if that's the case, then I mean, that for me, that's not a kid that I would want.
Yeah, I find the top end guys, the guys that develop and become those elite guys, I find we have to pull them back more than we have to push them. And like Jamie was a guy, and some of the other guys that I got that are moving to college, a lot of those times that when we're skating or we're in the gym, is like, okay, like relax. And then we got to pull them back and kind of put the reins on them, because they have that compete and that battle so ingrained in their kind of in their psyche. I find it hard. Like you said, right, if you got to get on the ice and motivate a kid, that's not a kid that you want to skate with.
No, but you know what? Again, great point. Yeah, like I've came across my fair share of guys too, that they, every rep of every drill or skating drill, and they're laying it out on the line like it's game seven. And it's like you got to kind of pick and choose your spots when you're overexerting that much energy and whatever it is. And I guess it's different with every kid. But yeah, that is a point, but like Jamie said, I mean, you can't, we're not in the business here to teach work ethic, and that's got to come from within. And if it doesn't, then, I mean, I just don't see the success, down the road.
You're also the goalie coach for the University of Toronto. And, so in terms of working with a 16, 17 year old kid, and then working with guys that played major junior or played 4 years of junior A and are now kind of, they're having now to juggle school, but also kind of still trying to chase playing professional hockey. What are the differences in terms of how you handle a 16, 17 year old guy who's going through an NHL draft, and then those older guys that are now kind of have life kind of in the forefront in terms of their development and how you deal day to day and in terms of working with their game?
Yeah, I mean, it's similar, but it is different. It's similar in the sense that, I mean, the development on the ice is, I mean, the same. You're out there, you're doing your sessions and whatnot, and you're working towards the same thing just to get better, obviously. On the flip side, they are obviously more refined and polished and have figured out a formula of what works for them, whether it's nutrition-based or sleep schedules, balancing school, because they've gone through it and they're older. So they're already established in that sense, whereas a guy like, let's say, Benny or Langevin, we're still trying to work out the kinks of what works for them. But, I mean, it doesn't really change too much, other than to that point at U of T, their school schedule is so crazy that it's like it's almost to the point where it's like it's impressive how these guys can play a high level hockey and deal with school at that level too. Because I mean, to attend U of T, obviously you've got to be fairly smart. So. But no, that's a great gig that I enjoy. I've done that for 2 years. I've got Alex Bishop and Freddie Fulham, who are two guys who played in the Quebec League there, two 97 borns that have had some good success too. So they're both also looking to try to play pro.
How do you balance your time between Sarnia, U of T, and then your own private coaching business that you're at?
Yeah, it's tough. I work 7 days a week. So during the season, I think it was one day off on December 25th, which is obviously Christmas, between September until, let's say, this quarantine. So, I mean, I kind of got used to it. I got into a routine, but it does get tiring going every day nonstop. U of T, I'm down there once a week with them, and then I try to get to as many games as I can. That is more flexible because they play Saturday nights, and Saturday nights I'm generally off, so I could get down there. Sarnia, obviously the workload's more. I'm down there every Tuesday all day with them, and then I'm there every Friday as well, and then a lot of times I'll sleep over there in Sarnia, and then I'm there Saturdays as well to get additional sessions in. So and then on top of that, I'm mixing in on all of those other days. I'm mixing in my own sessions. So typically I do my business. I run 35 to 40 sessions a week on top of Sarnia and U of T.
It's a lot of skates. That work
for you, like sub goalie coaches?
Yeah. So I've got five guys that run, they do a lot of team stuff, for me that I can't get to going rink to rink. And then they also do a lot of more so the little guys, let's say like now 2013s or 12s or 11s. They kind of start with them, and then, we'll transition over to me kind of once they start to hit minor at them.
We're getting old, man. Yeah, we're getting super old.
You think a 2013 goalie is 20 years younger than you?
Yeah, that's wild.
That's,
man.
That's crazy.
What's crazy is the age that they start training seriously at. I tell parents when they call, and I'm sure you get people calling you too. It's like your son's a 2015. Like, what do you want me to do with him? right? Like, it's like, just teach them how to skate right now. And then we'll go from there in like 2-3 years. Like, it's, I find it.
Great. I remember I was out on ice a couple of years ago. This is probably 2014, 15. And, the kid was maybe 6 or 7 and his dad is, saying to me, I don't know. He can't really butterfly, you know, he's really struggling. And I'm like, dude, he's not struggling because he's a bad goalie. He's struggling because he's 7. Like, give him a break. Just make sure he's having fun. Like, that's all you got to worry about right now.
Yeah, that's where in Toronto is obviously, I mean, hockey is really magnified. And I think people, and I know in the player business too, because I got a lot of buddies who do that, player and goalie. It's like, if you don't start training at 5 years old, you've missed the boat. And it's like, it
can almost be a detriment, because when you're that young, like, what kind of bad habits are you picking up?
Oh, it just burns the kids out. I've been around a couple of goalie parents, and they're screaming and yelling at their 5-year-old kid who does not want to be on the ice. And they're just yelling, we're never doing this again. Mm-hmm. This is costing me. So like, it just burns the kids out. Like, it's just nuts. Like, hockey parents, sporting parents in general, just can get wild sometimes.
In 3, 4, or 5 years, what's the goal? Is the goal an NHL gig?
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. That's definitely what I guess in 3-4 years, hoping to get to obviously the American Hockey League level.
So as like a development guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
See, I think that's the gig to strive for. Like, to me, that's the gig that is kind of, you're not kind of
coach.
What's that? The development goalie coach. Yeah, you get to kind of groom your guys. If you're getting guys on 3-year entry-level deals, you got some time to put some stamp on them. At the NHL level, it's like, those guys are set. Those guys are there. You kind of know what they're doing. There's not much coaching or development. You're just kind of like working within their structure and kind of being a sounding board for them. I'm not saying you can't take a guy in the NHL and make changes on him, but I feel like you get those younger guys and you have 3 years on an ELC deal, you can do some stuff with those guys, and you can kind of see changes that you make with those guys. And in 5-6 years, they're still doing the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, yeah, like that's again, like a high pressure job. I mean, you're ultimately in charge of developing an NHL team's, let's say, second, third, fourth round prospect for him to be the franchise guy. Yeah. Yeah, like I'm friends with a guy who's got one of those jobs, and you know what, he likes it for that reason. But again, it's also flexible, where he's with the team for 2 weeks straight, and then he's back at home running his own gig for 2 weeks straight as well.
Do you think NHL teams should place a guy full time East Coast goalie coach? Well, that was messed those up. East Coast goalie coach. And then have a designated AHL guy and NHL guy? Or do you think that having the development guy pop into the East Coast maybe once a month or once every 2 months to kind of check up on the guys is kind of the way to go?
Geez, that's a tough question. From personal playing experience, I would have liked if I would have had one full-time in the East Coast, because I mean, you've obviously played a fair share there. Like, there's a lot of very, very, very good goalies in that league. A lot of guys on NHL deals just strictly based off of contract space. So you've got to play somewhere, so you play there. So I feel like maybe, yeah, they should have a guy down there with, let's say, an NHL signed prospect all the time. And that might help the development curve for that particular kid. Yeah.
But if you look at you, like, your kind of path your career took, you're a guy who was very much in the details of your own game and studying your own game and being your own goalie coach. And that's now helped you kind of develop where you're going now and in the future. But there's got to be something said too about a prospect having to kind of figure it out on his own also.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny. I sometimes I'll sit here and I'll try to find videos of when I played in the O or in pro or whatever, because it feels like I kind of forget like how I played at this point now, being 4 years removed. And it's like, as a goalie coach now, I watch myself and I'm like, oh my God, like there is a lot of disaster in this game right now. And it's like, you know what, to Jamie's point, like if I had a guy on me 24/7 in pro, I think that would have really helped my game a lot more. Like I was watching actually this weekend, I was watching a lot of goals I gave up in pro were like cross ice backdoor stuff, but it was like, I was in a fully committed VH on the post where I was hugging the post. And it was like, well, hopefully my D takes that guy because there's no way you're getting there. And it's like, I really wasn't taught a lot about the reverse VH too much, or I guess I was taught it, but not when to use it. You didn't know when to use it. You didn't practice it too much. And you just kind of put yourself in the best athletic spot to get over. And I watched like 8 or 9 goals against on me in a row. I was like, oh my God, like I probably should have made all of those saves, you know? So, yeah. I think you gotta have a guy with the guys, and like I say to the guys in Sarnia, like I try to go over my workload there too. Like I go on road trips and stuff that I don't need to go on, but I go on them because, with Langer and Benny, both fairly young. Like I want to try to, if you're going to do it, you want to do a good job. And that's kind of been my approach there.
I was just going to say, so you played pro for 2 or 3 seasons. What made you decide to retire and step into the goalie coaching world?
So I was, when I first came out of the O, I signed an American Hockey League deal with Hamilton at the time. That between that season and the following season, I was called up by Wilkes-Barre and Binghamton. Majority of those 2 years were spent in the East Coast. There was a fair amount of time in the AHL where I was on the bench or in the stands, which obviously was not fun, with me feeling like because I was on American League contract, there was really no value for me to play for them. And that's not a knock on an American League contract, because I mean, I think that's a valuable contract for guys to get. But they obviously have guys on NHL deals that they need to take care of too. So I think in those 2 years, I got called up and sent down, and I think it was 14 or 15 times maybe. So it got to a point where I just had a duffel bag and it was full of clothing for like 2 weeks, and I had my suit bag and it was like, when's the next call coming, or when are you getting sent down? So what did it for me was getting called up one point, and I had it was a 20-hour travel day to where I had to go. And they told me I was going to be there for 2 weeks because I said, I'm not going to come if I'm only getting called up here for a day. So I do my practice, did the goalie session with the goalie coach there, got off the ice, and the coaches in my stall asked to see me in his office, and 20-hour travel day right back. And all I went for was one practice. So I kind of sat there and said, you know what? I don't want to continue this up and down, up and down, up and down. And I kind of lost the love for playing. And I decided that it was time for me to kind of pack it in. And when I played, I was pretty detailed and always took notes on stuff, and whether it was drills from different goalie coaches or NHL development camps, what guys were saying. And I sat there and I had this book of all this great information, and always liked the teaching side of it. So I said, you know what, let me open up a goalie school and see how it goes. And I mean, it's been pretty good ever since. So kind of,
where can people find you?
Okay. Yeah. So for the listeners at home watching this, you can find my goalie school account at palazizgoaltending.com. The spelling on that might be a little tricky, but test it out.
2 Z's.
That's right.
Awesome. Thanks, buddy. Awesome. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, boys. Thanks.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah. You guys. Take care. Yeah.